Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. So, folks, the U.S. men's national team had just had two friendlies, one against Turkey, one against Switzerland. The Turkey one was pretty good. You know, the players did pretty well. The team looked pretty good as well, despite the loss. Against Switzerland, of course, they got absolutely smashed yesterday. It was 4-0 at halftime. It wasn't a competition at all. So today we're going to talk about the state of the U.S. men's national team, the state of U.S. soccer, more broadly speaking. And for folks who have not been totally and utterly brainwashed by the mainstream American soccer media out there, this one's for you. Because you know what? They were gleeful yesterday. They were gleeful. Did you see their tweets? Did you see their posts? All these MLS propagandists posing, masquerading as reporters, masquerading as journalists, masquerading as independent thought leaders. They were gleeful, happy that the national team lost, despite always saying, have pride in the badge, despite always saying, you should always support the U.S. men's national team. Win, lose, or draw, rain or shine. They were happy, guys, happy. And you want to know why? Because it fits into their agenda, which is now what they are deploying in full force. What is that agenda? Well, you're going to have to listen to this episode a little bit more. But like I said, hopefully you have not been brainwashed by these bozos out there. Kirk Kinsey joins me. We talk about what players are deserving, what players are not deserving. What is the status of Pochettino? Is he good? Is he bad? Should he stay? Should he go? And so much more. Now, what sponsors this episode, if you have not been thoroughly brainwashed, you go to 343coaching.com if you're a coach. We've got free and premium programs for you there. And parents, your kids' potential, your kids' futures are on the line. I'm sorry to put it to you that way, but you are heavily influential in their lives, as I'm sure you are aware of. But you are also extremely influential in their soccer trajectories and how far they can actually go. For you, you should go to 343masterclass.com. That is where we have started and been on this journey to codify our decades worth of experience at all levels of youth soccer here in the United States, up to and including the professional level. We've seen countless cycles. We've seen players come and go from U8 through U18. And as I said, up to the professional level. The lessons learned, the codification is all there at 343masterclass.com. Please don't let these people in the mainstream derail you. Sign up today. All right, and lastly, for the little ones, if you are coaching 7 versus 7, you go to 7v7coaching.com. We are currently running a phenomenal promotion for you. You don't want to miss that window of opportunity. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this episode. Per usual, Kirk is a phenomenal guest, a phenomenal host as well in his own podcast. Here we go. Kirk, thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, I'm pumped about this one.
I actually had only a few takers, which is surprising. I was expecting a lot more. And everybody wanted to talk about things other than the national team. So I'm like, Gary, I want to pick your brain about blah, blah, blah. I'm like, bro, that's not what I put the message out there for.
You open the DMs once, Gary, and people are just going to say whatever they want. They're just going to come at you with all kinds of stuff.
Did you watch the whole game?
Nah. What are you going to see this in the second half?
Yes.
I watched the first half and then it was done.
Maybe we can start there. Why not watch the second half? You know, because people might think that you should watch the second half.
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to learn things, I don't know what you learn after Switzerland takes their foot off the gas and you change everything out and, you know, desperately try for a goal. But what are you really watching at that point? It's just two teams kicking the ball around for 45 minutes, hoping to be done with it.
I agree. It's completely useless. After the half, completely useless. Like, okay, say you're a U.S. men's national team player who is coming on the second half, didn't play the first half. Yeah, you want to show your stuff, but the context has switched so drastically that no matter what you do, it's meaningless.
Yeah.
And from a technical perspective, the coaching staff's perspective, even if you ball out like you've never balled out in your life before, there's always going to be that grain in the back of the technical staff's minds. Like, yeah, but the game was done. It didn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the equivalent of, you know, letting the last place team in your youth rec league, like score a goal finally at the end of the season. Like, all right, guys, go give them one, right? And so, I mean, yeah, it's, there's going to be question marks no matter what. And at the same time, like the whole thing is broken. So like, well, I mean, you'd have to make 11 subs to make a difference. And unfortunately, that's not a real thing.
Yeah. So I've had a couple of drinks. I still have a couple of drinks in front of me. I have some wine. Let me see what it is. It's a Josh Merlot. There's barely anything left. And I've got some cheap whiskey, so I don't want to get started right away.
Yeah.
So instead, I'm like, you know what? I need to pull it back a bit, drink a little bit of a Celsius.
Kids out there,
please don't drink. Please don't even do these energy drinks either. It's not good for you. I am not a role model for these sorts of things. But for some reason, when it comes to football, Kirk, I don't know. It's more than a lubricant. It's almost a necessity for me.
Yeah. I don't myself. But I spent plenty of time in the Marine Corps peeling Marines off of the pavement. So I get it. I don't begrudge anybody for it. So do your thing.
Cool. Appreciate that, man. Appreciate it. So I don't even know how to get started on this conversation. We talked about the second half thing. There's no conclusions to be drawn in the second half. Going into the match, some people asked me what my predictions were. I don't like doing predictions, as you well know, especially for friendlies, because by and far, friendlies are used as experimentation for managers, in my sincere opinion. I've never been a practitioner at the national team level, of course. Yeah. So caveat aside, being a practitioner in other arenas and just basic common sense, Kirk, is like, hey, this is an opportunity to see players and try to make up my mind as to what players kind of fit my system and fit my future and which players do not. And so that's kind of how I view these sorts of things, right? So when there were 9 wholesale changes from the game against Turkey, I'm like, okay, that makes perfect sense for me.
Yeah,
perfect sense. Yeah, throw in everybody in there and let's take a look. At that point, in my humble opinion, Pochettino is trying to assess individuals and not assess the collective performance of the group, you know, and try to build an identity or any of those sorts of things. Like, let me throw in these guys and let me see if I can see something that really piques my interest.
Yeah, I think it's 100%. Just that, right? Like, let's see all of them at once, right? Like, this is your shot. We ran this other group out against Turkey, and it didn't go so well either. And then, you know, this is now your moment. And Gary, I think everybody blew it.
Do you have any opinions on the players? I mean, we can go one by one if you'd like. We don't have to. Maybe you can just make a broad.
So I. For me, the big indictment is, it's hard to even say that because they were all so bad. But I mean, I think you have to start with the back line, right? And the goalkeeper. And I think the interesting thing is you see Matt Turner and Zimmerman and McKenzie there, who all have quite a few caps. And I thought we decided a while ago that we were done with them, that like it wasn't going to fly. Mark McKenzie a couple of years back gave up a huge goal against Mexico in like the first 3 minutes of a game, right? And Matt Turner kind of fell to pieces once he went to Arsenal and was on the bench. And Zimmerman, I thought, was okay earlier on in his career and then just kind of plateaued. But he's a guy that stayed in MLS too long, I think. And then the new fullbacks, Gary, those guys, I get it. It's tough. You're up against European internationals, but yikes, that was bad. With a capital B.
Yeah, I tend to agree that the Zimmerman thing is a little bit strange to me. We all know what that player is. And there's plenty of footage, I mean, for over a decade now on Zimmerman. So with respect to Pochettino and his technical staff, to call him in seems a little strange. Like, you know what that player is. And is he going to offer you anything in 2026? And so you start thinking, right? And people say, oh, Gary, you're a conspiracy theorist and all this stuff. And look, I think Pochettino isn't really a bootlicker and is not under the thumb of MLS. I don't believe that. But at the same time, the game's in Nashville.
you know, and Zimmerman's a natural guy. Yeah. And you start like kind of saying, like, why is this guy here? Yeah. And I think the broad national team fan base has gotten a little bit wise over the coming years, because I see some commentary to that effect, but they don't take it to its natural conclusion for some reason, or they don't really harp on it. So that's my only conclusion with regard to Zimmerman. Is he really going to be in contention for a starting position in the 2026 World Cup? Let's be real. Like, I don't think so. So why is he here is my question. And then on the outside back situation, fine. You want to see new guys? Great. This guy, Arfston, haven't seen much of him. I know he's on Columbus, but it was clearly obvious. Those diagonal balls, Kurt, were not an accident. Switzerland did some homework, and also the players on the field kind of identify, oh, that's a weak spot, and oh, that guy doesn't know how to mark the diagonal ball. Let me keep pinging diagonal balls to the weak side, which is Arfkin, and the second goal came from there. And other dangerous situations came from there. I tweeted, I posted, people think I have something against MLS. Obviously, of course I do, but not for the reasons that they think I do. It's just a fact. When you play in a low quality, low pressure, low intensity, low, you name it, competition, you don't get exposed to these sorts of high quality maneuvers. And the diagonal ball, Kirk, is a classic exploitive maneuver to penetrate all the time, whether it be against a low block, whether it be against a mid block, whether it be against anybody. It's a brilliant piece to execute. And Switzerland had a field day with it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, because when you're up against, again, high quality, oftentimes European or South American internationals who are pinging a ball diagonally, it's not hit the same way that it is in a low quality league, right? Where it floats and floats and floats, because that's what you have to do, right? These guys are driving that pass may be 25 feet in the air, but that's a driven ball. It may as well be a daisy cutter, right? So it's like you said, they haven't seen it. I think it's interesting that American fans are so often hostile to this idea, Gary. And I think this might be a moment where we can like help them see what we're getting at here. Maybe that sounds arrogant of me. I don't know. But you see it in a lot of sports, right? And everybody understands it. When a QB goes from college football to the NFL, this guy could have been lights out in college. Could have won the Heisman Trophy, right? Just completely unstoppable. And then he gets to the NFL and everybody's bigger, faster, stronger, smarter. The safeties have seen every single throw. And all of a sudden, Johnny Manziel is out of the NFL. Like it happens almost every single year in the NFL. And that's the difference, is when comparing MLS to the big leagues in Europe, I don't know that people totally grasp that all the time. I'm sure a lot of people that listen to your show, Gary, do, because I'm sure there's a reason they come here. But I feel like that's something that's missing in the American fan base, is this like true appreciation for the difference in quality.
Different levels, man. Different levels. Yeah. Like I don't know if you saw that I posted on X to a response to a reply a few days ago when people were asking me, oh, who is this Quinn guy, right? Like he's a nobody sort of thing, quasi on the national team. And I just took a screenshot of one of somebody who commented on our Instagram feed with respect to who is Pulisic, right? Because we posted something about Pulisic. And he's like, who is Pulisic? This is an Argentinian. And I don't think the American fan base truly appreciate how big the world is. And that people around the world are like, it's like who? They may have heard of him somehow, like, oh, he's the American guy who's kind of good. He's like Milan, sure. But we haven't arrived, Kirk. So if Pulisic is not even on that level, imagine what we're dealing with. You know, it reminded me of the FIFA rankings too, because I think we're misled here many a times with the numbers for some reason. And so in the FIFA rankings, I literally just brought it up. USA is number 16 and Switzerland is number 20, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's just outrageously disconnected from reality. And I can hear the opposition already. Oh, Gary, this wasn't our A team, you know, blah, 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 blah. Guys, please, for the love of God, you could have brought whoever you wanted to bring. If it wasn't clear, the superiority on an individual basis of the Swiss players, I can't help you. Kirk, do you think if we brought, do you believe if Pulisic was there, if Musa was there, if Adams was there, McKinney, would it have been more competitive? I believe so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Would it have been like what people here believe it would have been? I don't know.
I mean, I think you might get another 2-1 loss, right? If you have your first choice 11, you might keep it a little bit closer. You might steal a goal somewhere. But it goes back to that, what you said about the overall quality everywhere on the field. And it's the quality in those seemingly little things. What does your diagonal ball look like? What is your commitment to holding onto the ball as a team look like? What does your awareness look like? I thought it was interesting watching the team even try to build out of the back. And it's just like, give it to Turner again and dump it. Give it to Turner and dump it. Give it to Turner and dump it. And it's like, there's no movement. It's like the guys just aren't even aware that they're supposed to try and get open as the ball is arriving to another teammate. Everything's just half a step slow.
Hey, I know you know what I believe in many respects. So don't hold back. Is this Pochettino's fault?
I mean, he's the guy holding the bag right now, but he didn't break open the safe. He didn't go after the security guards at the bank, right? He's the guy holding the bag at the moment. So I mean, is it his fault for taking the job and not having it fixed? I guess. I mean, he said he'd take the job, but I mean, when was the last time this team did something truly special? A decade ago? Yeah. Semifinal in the Copa America under Jurgen, right? That's probably where I go. And, you know, they won some CONCACAF trophies. They should win CONCACAF trophies against the weakest Mexican side that we've seen in decades, right? And so everybody, you know, the media around the men's national team was rah-rahing Berhalter as, you know, the next skinny bald guy, not named Fat, right? But like, what did they really accomplish? And I think you have to go back to Jurgen. I realize how that ended, but like, man.
I agree. It's really annoying. Two things. On the one hand, it's encouraging many times to see the fan base progress in the way that they view the game and the way that they view the whole ecosystem. And I know that might sound arrogant or condescending, like I'm somehow in this ivory tower and I'm seeing the plebs kind of learn some things. But that's just how I see it. I'm going to say it. I'm not going to be shy about it. I wish they would graduate to the following point, that this is a win-win situation from a politics perspective for MLS/US soccer when they hired Pochettino. They put themselves in a win-win. It's like, oh, okay, you plebs, you wanted a foreigner, you wanted somebody with pedigree, you wanted to spend the big bucks, great. Look, we're going to do it for you. And then in the background, Kirk, I'm telling you this how it is. In the background, the establishment is kind of rooting for him to kind of fail or not fulfill anything better than what has been done in the past, so that they can then play the political game and point the finger and see, hey, all you guys wanted all this pedigree and high profile world-class manager, international manager, and look where it got you, you know?
Right.
No.
We told you so.
We were correct. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go back to our people, our yes men, our bootlickers, our brown nosers, be they called Trundolo, be they called Bruce Arena, be they called the Philadelphia guy, be they called whoever, some guy that we control.
Yeah.
And if for whatever reason Pochettino ends up being successful, in quotes, then they'll be like, yeah, see, we did what we had to do. We're good. Yeah. You know, we went out there. The previous regime is the one that got Berhalter and all this sort of stuff, but we fixed the problem. Total win-win, which brings, I want you to chime into that because I don't want to rant on too long, but it's going to ultimately bring me to the whole Tottenham rumor.
Yeah. No, I I see it that way. I think they're always hedging their bets, right? I think you can see it in so many of their behaviors that because it's such a corporate way of doing things, of managing the sport in the U.S., that they will go through every single ramification, and hiring Pochettino makes so much sense because you have an explanation for everything. Win, lose, or draw. It doesn't matter. You already have the bullet points written, and you wrote them beforehand, because again, it's very corporate. Just look at who they hire at USSF. There's nobody technical. Everybody is a corporate hire. You could be from WWE. You could literally be from WWE, Gary, and they will hire you because it's not about the sport.
Yeah, that lady, I forget her name because it's not important, obviously, from a sporting perspective. I hope at least our audience knows, right, as you said. But as the audience broadens a little bit and we get newcomers in and they listen, we do facilitate and we do help them see certain things. And for instance, tonight, everybody who always wears the flag, right, or has the badge, you know, America all the way, USA number one, no matter what, we want us to be successful. You saw a whole bunch of MLS propagandists, and I'm being sincere here, MLS propagandists that masquerade as journalists, masquerade as reporters, or just media talking heads. You can see it in that they were gleeful that the U.S. men's national team got trounced. And they were gleeful because it gives them this, empowers them with this narrative that I just finished describing, that, oh, you all hated Berhalter. Berhalter was better. He never had these sorts of situations. They were happy that the U.S. men's national team lost, which is, I'm kind of, there's a tension here, because I believe the higher level of fandom or being a supporter is to have a little bit of that, Kirk.
Yeah.
So for instance, if like, I know you support LAFC, you've done a lot of work with LAFC and if they suck or they're doing things the wrong way, a true supporter, a true fan will call out the bullshit and go hard, irrespective of how they may come down on you.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. And I think that is the next level. But I don't think these folks who are happy that the men's national team lost are doing it for that reason. You know, they're doing it specifically so that they can get their bootlicker back into the fold. And that it protects them and their job and their aspirations.
Yeah. So I love this because I think it dovetails with your last point about people hedging their bets and like having pre-scripted narratives. And I think this is the number one thing with what I refer to as the state media, like straight up Pravda. Anything that comes out of MLS or Apple is Pravda. Like that, it's all motivated. And for a long time, I've tried to point out to people, and the more that people see it, the more that they like, I do now people tweet at me, like they have shirts made like state media, not even once, and they'll wear it and they'll send a picture to you. And I was like, yes, I got one. But their favorite game to play is we are going to go hard on amping up MLS, on amping up, you know, whatever our thing is in U.S. soccer at the moment. And oftentimes that's it, you know, the newest guy, the hottest phenom in MLS. And then when it doesn't work out, they pull back to like, oh, what do you expect? He's up against Virgil van Dijk. We did it all for the memes anyway, right? So they fall back on this, oh, we were just joking anyway. It's like a classic Mott and Bailey strategy, right? Where you have an easily defensible position, like, well, we did it for the memes. And then you have the advanced position that they're always trying to go out into, which is MLS is the number one thing. We are, like, everything we're doing is perfect. Berhalter is a positional play mastermind. And then it's like, well, did you really think that we thought he was Pep Guardiola? Like, we didn't really think that. That's on you for thinking that, right? And so then they turn it all back on the fans as if they're dumb. And I think your point about the fan base starting to level up is the fact that now a lot of that ire and a lot of those memes that they put out is attacking the fan base, right? They're gleeful because the fans are upset because they, quite frankly, have a lot of contempt for the fans because they don't buy whatever it is that they're selling.
I think it's because the fans ultimately have the power, even though they might not know it themselves, right? That the fans have the power. Like, our voices matter. The only reason, I believe this wholeheartedly, the only reason Pochettino was hired is because the fan base was so rabid for so long, and they made it so untenable for the mafia to hire another American bootlicker that's why they went out and had to hire Pochettino. It was the fans that won that.
Yeah.
And now, unfortunately, the fans are being maneuvered into believing that this was all a grand mistake and that the fans were stupid for wanting us to get somebody from outside the family.
Yeah, I mean, it's the classic, like, here, you got what you wanted. Now shut up.
Kirk, that's why I said, hey, all these look, when you have a high-profile, quote-unquote, world-class, I don't know if Pochettino's world-class, but he's definitely in the international conversation. Yeah. I mean, let's be real. Look at where he's managed, okay? Mm-hmm. He's managed Messi, Neymar, Mbappe. Like, let's be real, guys, okay? And you think he can't handle the U.S. men's national team. Get the fuck out of my face, okay? So let's be real. We're talking about that caliber of manager. So there's always rumors for those sorts of managers with respect to job opportunities. Always. And I would love for Pochettino to say, like, F you, I'm out, and go over there and have somebody else come in and let it be a bootlicker. I don't care, because I think that is the only escape from the trap that they have laid for us, Kirk, which is a win-win situation for the establishment. Win if Pochettino fails. Win if Pochettino succeeds. If Pochettino exits, that breaks the win-win for them.
Yeah, it's like the unforeseen outcome that they couldn't have planned for. Yeah. Just that somebody with plenty of other options being like, hey, you know, I don't need this. I don't need you guys. I'm out of here. Go back
Hopefully
to Paris.
He doesn't have these gag order provisions in his contract, which I know, obviously, they exist here. You can't speak about stuff. But I'd be for it, for him to exit. No problem at all.
Yeah, I mean, the trajectory of the program has been so bad for so long. Again, it's Pochettino holding the bag at the moment, right? So, I mean, is he just going to end up being the fall guy? And, like, we blow the World Cup in 2026, and for the next 20 years, we have to litigate not only Klinsmann, but now the other foreigner that they hired in Pochettino.
Speaking of leveling up, Kirk, and I think this is the next step for everybody here, is stop looking at the face of the programs or the coach as ultimately the responsible one. Yes, I get it. The coach and the manager does have a lot of responsibility and does have a lot of the accountability does lie on their shoulders. But I would wish that they would put a little bit more weight on, okay, who hired this guy?
Yeah.
And then who hired the people who hired this guy? You know, because ultimately the buck stops somewhere, and that is the next level of supporterdom, fandom that I wish we would graduate to, is go down that rabbit hole and see where the buck ultimately stops.
Yeah.
And then start inspecting that location, that group, that institution more than the person. Because as in all things, in my opinion, the institution is a lot more responsible than any singular person within the institution.
Yeah. I think this is a good point because of what happened in the last cycle and a half with Berhalter, where it was kind of laid bare, where Jay Berhalter is involved in the process of hiring his brother, who was kind of this mid-level MLS manager. And then, again, back to the talking points, it was all sold as like, hey, this is the next big thing, right? And then when he is not renewed because of the whole Reyna versus Berhalter fiasco, and they go into another search 8 months later, it's not like they don't say, hey, Greg did some good things. They say, when we went through all the metrics and what we want out of the program. So again, back to the corporate speak, right? These are our key indicators. These are our metrics. These are whatever it is, right? Guess who was the best? Greg Berhalter. And it's like, well, yeah, because like all you have to do is it's like getting statistics to tell you whatever you want them to, right? Mm-hmm. You can program in the conclusion that you want ahead of time and it spits out exactly what you want. Yeah, we're going to hire Greg again. So I think this point about being able to find who it is, Jay Berhalter the first time around, JT Batson now, right? Like that's who we can target next. And then, yeah, you can go after whoever hired him, as far as I'm concerned, because the whole federation is just asleep at the wheel. And you could look at that at any level of the game, men's national team, women's national team, youth soccer, the way they govern professional soccer in the country, like all the way up and down. It's a complete gong show.
Kirk, what's your opinion on, because you mentioned it, the parents getting involved with Gio Reyna and his situation, and now Pulisic's dad getting involved, coming out to defend his son. This obviously hits close to home for all of us who work in American soccer. It's very familiar. So your reactions.
Oh man, I feel like I'm on both sides of the fence on this one, to be honest, because I feel like the parents getting involved, like you said, is such a familiar thing on the youth side and dealing with so many suburban helicopter parents that just can't get out of their own way and are completely neurotic and can't let their now grown children just manage themselves, right? It's a bit embarrassing and infantilizing to the players, I think. But at the same time, I saw Berhalter as a villain in that whole thing. The way that he just left and was all of a sudden speaking at, you know, the Harvard Business School on leadership, which is like another thing that like bugs me about Berhalter, is it was like they propped him up so hard and he throws Reyna under the bus in a matter that was supposedly closed. And then Landon Donovan opening his mouth as if he didn't take a year-long sabbatical himself and get bounced from the World Cup rightfully. So it's like, I agree with Landon for calling out Pulisic, but it's like, bro, go call Dempsey and have him do it. If you want anybody, like go get Clint, and Clint can say that. But I'm sorry, Landon, you can't, because for the past 10 years, all I've heard is how unfairly you were treated. So in that instance, I'm like, yeah, Mark, go get him. Like, go protect your boy from this other villain, right? I don't know. So it's at some point you just have to sit back and just laugh, because again, the gong show. But I don't know. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I always resort to trying to think back in all my years observing, studying the game internationally, right? And what's happened and all the Spanish language media, which I think is a huge, in my opinion, is a huge advantage for multilingual people to be able to gain different cultural perspectives. Because it's one thing to kind of see a dubbed interview with Marcelo Bielsa, you know, and read the dubbed version in English. And it's another thing to actually understand the Spanish language and really get the context and really get the feeling and the inflections and all that sort of stuff. So I think about, does this sort of parent involvement, like in youth soccer, happen internationally where mommy and daddy are coming to try to defend their kid? Have there been instances? Yeah, but it's different, you know? So for example, Neymar's dad, in many respects, acted as his agent, you know? So, but if you're like his agent, that is a different role than if you're just daddy, you know, coming to tweet on social media.
Yeah.
You see? Or if Messi's dad comes out, who also has some sort of management role, you know, in what is the Messi brand and the Messi as a player thing, him saying something is different than the daddy coming out to the defense of his kid. So this just feels more like the culture here in America, where it's the kids can't fend for themselves. They're soft and they get attacked and the kids can't, you know, defend themselves. And so mommy and daddy have to come in and intervene. And it's so American soccer.
Right. Yeah. I think there's this weird, sometimes I think it has a lot to do with just an inferiority complex, right? Where it's like Landon's going after Christian, who's supposed to be the chosen one. So here we go, right? I'm going to step in and weigh in on this debate because it feels like Landon's attacking my son's legacy. And it's like, man, just let the tape speak for itself. It does bug me that like it's this constant soap opera of just, it just seems like there's so much maneuvering, Gary.
It's not sport. I don't even know what it's for. It's not even sport anymore. It has nothing to do with the sport.
It's the WWE.
It's all fucking extra sporting activity. Politics, brand, business, entertainment. It's nothing to do with the sport anymore.
Yeah. I would love it to get to the point about, like, just make it about the sport. Like, throw them, give them a plain white or plain blue t-shirt and let them go out there. No names on the back. You can duct tape the numbers on the back for all I care. Sell tickets for $5 a piece and let them earn the trust of the fan base back. And, like, just start filling the stadium like that. Just let the sport speak for itself. No more marketing campaigns. No more trying to co-opt whatever movement you're trying to co-opt. Like, just go out and play the sport and let the football speak for itself. Let that be the brand for a while.
Play devil's advocate for me, if you will, or maybe you literally believe this. It's okay for Pulisic to take some time off, or Musa, or all these guys. Like, play devil's advocate for me, because obviously I'm in the position, like, what the fuck is this? You should not be taking time off.
You want me to steel man them taking time off?
Yes.
yikes. I think the best argument is, why would we bring the Ferraris out to play in this, right? And if they're not all going to be there, then why are we going to waste their time at all? And, like, if their program really is this much of a disaster, then leave them there. Leave them in Europe. There's no sense in bringing them out. There's no sense in risking injury. Let them rest up now, because they're not going to get it next summer as we head into the World Cup. And we keep saying it, and I think I agree that this is one of the most consequential years in American soccer in a long, long time. So it's critical that they get it right, notwithstanding all the things that they continue to get wrong on, like, a weekly basis. So I think that's it. Let them have the R&R now, and let them come back and get informed during their club season and be ready for the World Cup.
No, it's a good logical argument, and I think many share that argument or make that argument for whatever reasons, whether they've been sincere or insincere. My perspective is, I get it, but injuries happen in football. Yeah. This is a fact of life. Injuries happen. So you can't place players in a bubble, in a crystal, you know, treat them like delicate crystal forever. They happen. Yeah. They happen. And I know this from firsthand experience. I've been in the business forever, at the professional level included. So you can't be like, but what if my player gets injured? Rationale. That could happen when you're about to head into your first game of the World Cup, you know, and you're just doing a little practice session, a little walkthrough, your player can get injured, you know? So
yeah.
I don't subscribe to that very much. And again, I rely on my view and studies of the international game, and nobody who's serious about football, no country takes that angle. Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Uruguay, Venezuela, Germany, Italy, Belgium, Spain, England, you just name a country. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody is out there with the narrative of, we're trying to protect, you know, our 1, 2, 3, 5 quote unquote best players, you know, from injury so that we can have them ready for X.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. That does not happen, Kirk.
No, I think just take our neighbors to the south in Mexico, right? Mm. Carlos Vela, who's probably one of the most gifted Mexican footballers in generations, right? And a lot of Mexican fans do not like him because they didn't see him as serious. They saw him as somebody who just, like, phoned everything in and didn't really care and never took things seriously. And they'd see these flashes from him and be like, oh, this is the guy, right? He's the one. And then it's like, disappear again, right? And I think Pulisic has a bit of, like, he might be in danger of that if he does this too much, where it's like, I'm going to take some time off, right? I think the U.S. has definitely lost some of this identity of, like, the underdog identity and the chip that they used to carry on their shoulder, where we're going to prove it every single opportunity we have. We're going to prove it to the world. And now it's just kind of like, well, whatever. We'll see you in 2026.
Please remind me of the whole injury discussion. Okay.
Okay.
I want to come back to that, but you've tickled something here, and I want to pull on this string, which is the chip on the U.S. men's national team shoulder. Players like Wijnaldum, Ernie Stewart,
yeah,
Reyna, the father, McBride, you like name that whole generation before. Here in the United States, we did not have a professional league that paid the players great money at all.
Yeah.
You were basically poor, and you still are poor to this day. So let's not get it twisted, okay? If you sign for MLS, unless you're a TAM player or a DP, you ain't making fucking money. You're making 100K or 200K a year, and you might be like, oh, 200K a year, Gary, that's not too shabby. Great. But if you have a 10-year lifespan, if you're optimistic, 200K a year, what are you going to do with your life after that? That's not a lot of money, okay, for a professional athlete. So, but back in the day, it was really bad, Kirk. So you best believe that anybody who was afforded the opportunity of the national team platform went like a mother effer, you know, to perform on the international stage so that they can get an opportunity overseas and get paid, because they were getting paid 30K a year here, or 40K or 50K a year.
Just a couple of years ago in MLS, that was the minimum. I think it was 60,000. So
it was lower than that.
Yeah,
it was lower than that, Kirk.
Yeah,
like good, well paid players were making what you just said, 60K or 80K or 100K. Like the only way of escaping and achieving some sort of economic windfall back then was to crush it at the national team level. Yeah. And now you've got these guys who are in Europe making, you know, high six figures or low seven figure salaries, which is amazing. They don't need the national team like those guys back in the day needed the national team. So it's totally understandable. And I also speak from, again, I rewind the tape to my experience just being in the game for so long. This was a common narrative for Argentina. You know, in the Argentine public back in the 90s or the early 2000s, when so many players were going to Europe and making massive money, and they would come back to the national team, the national team wouldn't win or wouldn't meet expectations. Everybody, all 30 million Argentines and the entire media would be like, yeah, those fuck faces. I'm not in your podcast, Kirk, so I'm going to cuss here.
Do it.
Those fuck-faced Europeans, they don't give a shit because they already make money. They don't need the national team, so screw them. So we and the fan base here are living through, for the very first time, they're getting a taste of what so many around the world have lived through already, which is you've got these guys who are making a lot of money. They don't need the national team.
Right. I think there's a lot there that you had to be undeniable when it came to the men's national team, because that was your only time to get on a real stage and get somewhere, right? So you had to show up. You had to show up. I think we had this conversation about LAFC and the Club World Cup. It was like, all these fans were like, man, why doesn't LAFC play like this more? It's like, well, now there's eyeballs, right? Now people are watching. So here's my big chance to break through. And I think it's the same way, right? I hesitate to bring this up, Gary, because I don't like to mix commentary of the women's national team and the men's national team all that much, because there's so much, again, kind of this like pre-scripted narrative around every, while the women win and the men suck and blah. I just find it so tiresome. But the women are being caught by the rest of the world, and the national team used to pay their salaries, right? There was like a deal between where the federation would pay their club salaries if they played in NW. So do you think there's a tie-in there as well?
I think to first order, which by my estimation kind of accounts for 80% of what we see with the women's national team, it's that the rest of the world has kind of taken women's soccer more serious than before. And it's just kind of like, we catch up so fast because we actually suck. And I'm not shy about it.
Yeah.
The women's national team, and I'm not shy, the women's national team sucks balls. And they've always sucked balls. And the girls' soccer programs here, youth soccer in our country, suck balls. they are not developing amazing players and the women's national team is amazing and that's why they win them. No, it's because the rest of the world didn't give a shit about women's soccer. That's why. If the rest of the world cared about women's soccer the way they care about men's soccer, the women's national team, the U.S. women's national team, would be worse than the men's national team. Worse.
No, I'm with you there. And again, I don't like mixing the commentary because it's just like it gets so like there's still this like I don't know. There's just it seems like there's so much animosity between the two fan bases that it's just like not even worth getting into half the time. But I agree. Like the rest of the world is just showing like we actually understand the game. In some ways, I think it undercuts the idea that like that the U.S. is progressing. Because it's like, no. The rest of the world is just showing you, like you said, now they prioritize this thing and they are literally that much smarter. They're gonna close a 40-year gap in 4 years. That's all it takes.
Incredible.
Like, whatever.
And not to discredit the individual athletes. Awesome. Mia Hamm, all you guys, Brandi Chastain, you know, that's my generation. You know what I'm saying? Like late 90s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Love you guys. You worked your asses off. I get it. I understand it. Nothing against you. I'm just speaking like how it is, man.
I think for a lot of us, that was like our first kind of immersion into like, U.S. soccer was watching them when that penalty shootout. Like it was just this massive cultural moment for everybody. So, I mean, in terms of like launching the sport forward, it was huge. But it's not because they went out there and tiki-taka their way to a World Cup win, right? So anyway.
No. So let me circle back to
the injuries.
The rationale about it's cool that we didn't bring the European guys for injury prevention, they need to recover and all that sort of stuff. Let's pull on that a little bit.
Yeah.
You had two really good games against really good opponents, which is a rarity, historically speaking, here. They always schedule weak sauce opponents. You're always playing against CONCACAF, minnows. The last time we actually kind of consistently played against strong opponents was in the Klinsmann era, when Klinsmann specifically, explicitly stated in the media that he wants to play against the best teams in the world for friendlies or whatever. So he scheduled Germany in Germany. I think it was Italy in Italy, like serious stuff. And he got good results in those friendly and people are like, they're just friendlies. They don't matter or whatever. Right, okay. Well, these were friendlies and you're making a lot of noise about these friendlies.
Yeah.
Okay. So you had two amazing opponents. Turkey is no slouch. People don't understand here. Okay. Turkey is no slouch. Switzerland is always really strong.
Yeah.
Kirk, always.
Yeah.
And this was a prime opportunity to get, quote unquote, the group that you think is the group together to continue forging the style of play, the system of play, the understanding between the elements on the field leading up to the World Cup. Was it a good opportunity to test the scrubs? Okay, sure. But I don't think that's what Pochettino would have liked. I think Pochettino would have liked having the whole group there together.
I think you're right. And I think the U.S. has kind of done this to itself with this whole, we have an A, B, C, and a D team, like all the way down. We have a special camp for MLSers every January where we can bring them in and showcase them and put them up on social media and pretend like, Ben Arfston, is that his name? Arfston?
Oh, the left
or,
back?
Yeah, or Harriel or whatever his name is. Like, we're going to pretend that they're going to be the next guy because they were in Camp Cupcake in January and, you know, they did good in a friendly against Guadeloupe. So the next big thing, right? And so they've kind of set this up on purpose, this like tiered system. And a couple of years ago, there was both a Nations League and a Gold Cup, and they really leaned into it. And it was like, okay, A team's going to Nations League and B team's going to Gold Cup. And they won both of them. And it was like, this is the way forward. Yeah. And so now it's like, we're going to keep doing this thing where, so the A squad doesn't want to be here. It's all right. We'll run out the B squad and, or in this case, C or D. I don't know what you would classify this as other than just bad. But if you're going to have those big time friendlies, bring in the quote unquote big guns and actually test yourself and actually you know, take the temperature of the program, unless, again, you're playing it safe and building in excuses ahead of time, right? You bring in all the big guns and all of a sudden it's like, well, I guess our players really aren't good enough to do this on the international stage. But if you bring in these guys, it's like, well, what'd you expect? Is it that that left back starts for, you know, he starts at wing back in a three-man back line. And the right back starts for Philadelphia Union sometimes, but not always. So it's like, yeah, again, built-in excuses everywhere, playing it safe.
It's good to be in an exploratory phase when you have a full cycle to work with.
Yeah. I think this is, it goes back to the whole fiasco, like the, you know, the perfect out. Berhalter was gone. Hire the guy then. Let him come in. And that's when you do all this stuff. But instead, you know, we bring him back. Copa America goes terribly. Yeah, and it's just like one mistake after another to the point where it's snowballing to a day like today, where it's like, I don't know what this team is trying to do. I don't know what the program's trying to do. I don't know what anybody's trying to do other than just put butts in seats next summer.
It's so crazy that we play politics here on the sporting side. It seems like it's all politics. Isak not coming, politics. Musa not coming, politics. Why are these guys not coming? Like, why do they reject the national team? It makes no sense. Got the guys, all the other players who are important to their national teams, they play 4,000 plus minutes on their European club teams, which is way more than Pulisic and all these other guys, way more than Musa. Yeah. Musa barely played this season, mm-hmm. way more. And they show up for their national team competitions. Oh, Gary, the Gold Cup's not important. You think the Nations League thing is as important as the Euros or as important as... It's not something stratospheric where I need to be there. But and you see a 40-year-old Ronaldo, obviously, to just bring up somebody that everybody can recognize, right? Because if I start naming obscure names, like nobody will follow along. But Ronaldo's 40 years old and... he's there, man.
Yeah.
He's there.
And I think this is such a good example. And this is why I think, again, I agree with Landon's commentary on the whole thing. Like, this is a guy who cares. This is a guy who understands. This is a guy who's over the hill, right? His best days are long gone on the pitch. And he is there in tears because he was able to help Portugal win a major trophy, right? And it means that much to him. Going back to, like, there's no chip on the American shoulder anymore. Like, we just look at a Gold Cup win, it's like, ah, oh, it's meaningless. To some extent, I agree. It's kind of a silly competition against a lot of silly teams. But if that's all you can do, if that's the only competition you can play in, that's the only competition you can play in. So go play in it and take some pride in it.
Do you think the players are kind of playing politics and being calculated with all this? It's like, put yourself in their shoes, right? The Euro guys, the A-team guys, right?
Yeah.
Put yourself in their shoes. Like, what do I have to gain for going and playing these friendlies or the Gold Cup? I only have something to lose.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of like the calculus. If I show up to these games or this Gold Cup tournament and I don't perform or the team doesn't perform, will that cause me a roster spot on the World Cup? Will that cause me pain? Yeah. Versus... the alternative, which is, I don't care. National team called me. I'm going to go serve.
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, I guess the real question is, what's the message that they're trying to send? Or, you know, what is the message that they're trying to send? Or what is the calculation that they're making? I find it hard to believe that Sick McKenny, Musa are saying, well, if I screw it up, I'm not going to get called in for the World Cup, because it seems like they're completely untouchable. And like they, you know, Coutinho couldn't leave them off if he wanted to. So I don't know if that would be it. I don't know. It's a great question. What other possibilities could there be, do you think?
Or is it because they are untouchable, they're like, I could do whatever I want. You know?
That's where the power resides, is actually with them and not Pochettino or whoever else might be able to hold them to account.
And hence, it brings me to a post I made, which I meant wholeheartedly, and we can discuss, which is two things. One, I hate blaming the fans, but in many respects, if you have an unsophisticated fan base, then this is what you get. Because if you have a quote unquote sophisticated fan base, you don't tolerate this stuff.
Yeah.
Right. You actually go after your players, and nobody is sacred. Like, even in Argentina, Messi was not sacred.
Yeah. They
went after Messi hard. And here, since the fan base, the supporters they're so soft, Kirk, that the players feel even more empowered to fail, to do whatever the hell it is that they want.
Yeah, I don't see people turning on them. And I mean, to be fair, like I would have because I have so much disdain for the Federation and so much of what's gone on, it's hard not to take the player's side half the time. Even if you want to hold them to account, I think it's difficult because there's so many other problems everywhere. And maybe that's what they're saying is like, I don't need this in my life. This is like, I think it was Timmy Chandler, refused a call up back in, I don't remember what it was. Maybe it was for that Copa America under Jurgen. And essentially what he said was like, national team doesn't pay for my lifestyle, right? My club does. They're the ones that I have to take care of here. And then that, you know, that set off this whole, see the dual nats don't care about the team. And I don't know.
But Nagby said something similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nagby, who I hold in very high regard, also is like,
excellent.
The national team, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not a dual nat.
Yeah, was he? I thought he was eligible for somebody else, but
he was. He became a U.S. citizen at some point. But do you think? Okay, here's the million-dollar question. Flo, top of mind, Kirk. Jurgen left Donovan off the World Cup roster for certain reasons. I speculate to a certain extent that it's like, hey, he took a sabbatical. He didn't want to show up for national team duty. He said he had a lot of things to take care of personally. And Jurgen's like, well, I need somebody who's committed here.
Yeah.
And I can't have somebody kind of just like freeloading and riding on his brand to just stroll on in whenever he wants. And you're out. And I defended Jurgen's decision. And many in the United States hated Jurgen for that. So now it's kind of a similar sort of scenario, kind of.
Yeah.
With Pulisic. Your opinion. I've already made it known.
Yeah. You're asking point blank if I leave him off.
Or at least consider it.
Yeah. I 100% consider it. Now, there are things that I don't know. And the Pulisic family is definitely trying to make it known that, like, hey, there's other stuff that you don't know about, right? I think Pulisic's little comment, just what the doctor ordered, is a bit tongue-in-cheek and also just defensible enough, again, very corporate, right? It's just enough. I think you can absolutely have the conversation about leaving him off. And I think this goes back to under the Berhalter regime where McKennie gets sent home for breaking COVID protocols. And again, at the time I was like, yeah, let the kid live, for crying out loud. But then the Gio Reyna situation, and Greg outsourced that to his leadership council. Right. And then they, no, Gio, we'll let you stay. We'll let you stay. It's okay. And so I think you're seeing like over and over and over again with this quote unquote golden generation, a huge sense of entitlement. And maybe if you would squash the bug when it was McKennie or Gio, you actually don't have to deal with this. But now you're kind of reaping what you sow because the program has let the players get away with this nonsense for a long time. And now it's the biggest fish of them all. And so it's like, okay, like are we going to actually hold the line on being hard-nosed and being serious, or are we going to let this go again? And man, that's a tough one, because that's, for better or worse, still your best player, and the most impactful player and the most marketable player. But man, you are letting the inmates run the asylum if you just let them off scot-free. So I don't know the answer. And I think they've been, like I said, making this bed for a long time and should have handled it a long time ago. And now they're just in a massive game of chicken.
Totally. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I think, frankly, that's why one of the reasons they lobbied against Klinsmann and ultimately got rid of Klinsmann, because he decided this is the line.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hold this line because this is what it needs to be, frankly speaking. We can't let the inmates run the asylum, sort of thing. and we didn't like it here.
Yeah, I think, man, the immune response to Klinsmann and the way that he went after the domestic league and the players, despite the success that he had, again, getting out of that group, coming within a Chris Wondolowski misc of getting through, right? Again, like making something happen against Belgium, against that Belgium golden generation. And then again, the Copa America semifinal where you lose to Argentina. That was kind of a high watermark. And going back to just how gleeful they were to get rid of him finally, once World Cup qualifying wasn't going exactly how they wanted, I think, man, that to me, it's still so instructive of how U.S. soccer operates. And if Pochettino were to leave off Pulisic this time, I think you'd see the same thing all over again. And you would never even have a chance at hiring another high-profile manager who isn't domestic in the next 50 years. Like I think the grudge would be that long.
Oh man.
I mean, I just don't see. I think they'd be like, we tried it twice in 15 years, and it quote unquote failed. Right? They would see it as failure both times, and they just get rid of. They just abort the whole thing.
That's why I think the key to everything is education of the fan base. I think that's the key, man. Because that's what the authorities react to, perception and optics.
Yeah.
And if they can get away with brainwashing people with those sorts of storylines, then they can get away with, okay, for the next three decades, there's no more foreigner here. It's all bootlickers.
Yeah.
But what's your opinion, dude? Is the fan base getting fucking smarter or not, dude?
I don't know. I really don't. I think there are pockets. I think the problem, Gary, is the more you get in, the more educated you become, the more you just tend to detach. And so maybe my story is irrelevant here. Sorry if this is anecdotal to anybody out there who's just rolling their eyes at me. But so I watched the 2006 World Cup final. I played soccer all my life. Was around the game, obsessed with the game. Played all through my teenage years, you know, little kid, teenage years, would ref every chance, every time that I wasn't playing. 2006, I'm living in the Dominican Republic, and I'm watching France and Italy in the final with a bunch of Dominicans who just love baseball. They don't care about soccer, but it's the World Cup, so everybody's watching, right? And I was head over heels in love. Like just the whole, like that whole match, and everybody remembers that match, the penalty shootout and Zidane, like the whole thing, right? And I was like, this is incredible. And I'd only experienced it for American youth soccer in the 90s. That's all that was my exposure to the game. And then this happens and I'm like, this is the good stuff. This is what I want, right? And then the U.S. men's national team was the next logical step for me because it's like, well, I fell in love with the sport professionally at the World Cup. And so that was kind of my way into soccer and, you know, didn't really get it with MLS, just followed the big teams in Europe for a while and started to get more and more into it. And over time, the more that I learned about the sport, the less and less that I cared about the men's national team. And it may seem crazy because I talk about it all the time still, like it's still important to me, but, at this point, it's kind of like I've been beaten into submission. Like, well, you can probably see, like, I'm pretty waffly on what they should do because, like, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter what they do because at the end of the day, the Federation is going to be beholden to MLS. So I think over time, you just become so jaded that it's like, why do I care? I'm shutting off the second half. Why would I stay for this? And, like, this, like, I took my family of five to Qatar to watch the U.S. play in the World Cup, right? So, like, this is somebody who's bought into the program and is just completely jaded at this point. So I think it's important to educate people, but it's also dangerous because you do just become jaded and detached. That's a long answer.
It's absolutely perfect. That's how they win.
That's a great point. Is if we all just throw our hands up in the air and say like that, this will never get fixed, as opposed to like trying to fix it ourselves. So I guess that's the next question, Gary. How do we lift where we stand and try and fix this? I don't know. I don't know what that answer is.
Yeah, my current version of the solution, I've tried many things. I've made progress. I am proud of the stuff that we've accomplished.
Yeah.
But there's a bigger picture that definitely I have not accomplished. And my latest version of an attempt is try to get the parents when their kids are the youngest.
Yeah.
Because that gives enough of a runway, you know, to amass critical mass.
Yeah.
Of the fan base to actually do something before they become apathetic, because they end up becoming apathetic once they realize their kids, it's like not going to happen for them, whatever that means,
yeah.
Whether it mean like, oh, they're over soccer, they burnt out, or, you know, they're not going to play college, or, oh, they're not going to make pro, whatever that means. But eventually they fall out of the picture. But if you get them, the parents, when the kids are really young, then you have a 5, 6, 7, 8 year runway before that eventuality.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't fully fleshed out the idea yet, but that's my current thought process, because the establishment depends on what you just described. When people go through the entire experiential process of learning how this whole sausage is made here, and by the time you realize some of the truths,
yeah,
your kids have aged out, or you yourself have moved on to other things, and then they just have a whole new cohort of suckers, you know,
yeah,
to become customers.
Right. No, I think getting the parents involved helps, because then you can build a proper culture in the home where the kids grow up understanding the game better. And it's like a multi-generational project, right? To this point, when I started coaching on the youth club side 9, 10 years ago, I would talk a lot with the parents about the pathway, like what does it look like? But I'd also try and be very honest about like what was wrong in U.S. soccer and like all the little traps that MLS had laid and U.S. soccer, how they abdicated their responsibility. And the thing that got them the most is when I would sit down these parents who were in Arizona, and I would bring up the MLS territory map on a big board, and I'd say, who knows who Real Salt Lake is? And no hands would go up, of course, right? And be like, they own the professional rights to your child because you live in this zip code. They'd be like, well, Salt Lake isn't that Utah? I'd be like, yeah, guess what? They own all of Arizona. So if your child wants to play professional soccer in this country at the highest level, somebody is going to have to pay them for the privilege of signing your child just to get in the door. And they would, like, you would see the disbelief in their faces. They're like, this can't be right. There's no way this can be right. And I'm like, that's the proper response, is to be completely caught off guard and flabbergasted by this whole thing. But it would almost in some ways like ignite new passion in them. Like, well, screw it. My kid doesn't belong to somebody in Salt Lake. I'm going to figure this out. And it's okay. Now I got some fire in you. Right. And so I think if you can fire up, maybe we're backtracking on the whole Mark Pulisic thing. Maybe this is what you actually have to do, is get parents more involved in it, Gary, to the point where they're going to protect their little kids. And like, no, Salt Lake doesn't know my kid. Landon Donovan doesn't know my kid. I don't know. I think we've come full circle here, and now we're changing our tune.
It's all connected. I don't blame Mark in any way.
Yeah, no.
This is the beast that you're dealing with here in this country.
Maybe that's why the Reynas and the Pulisics speak out, is because they understand how the sausage is made.
100%. It's not the same as the helicopter parent of a U11. No, they get it. They understand what's going on here. 100%. They understand the sentiment and just fucking everything. The inner workings, the machinations of the system. They get it, you know, and they look at their kids and they know what their kids' brand and narrative has been up until the moment that they spoke.
Yeah.
They're not just off the cuff, emotional parents, you know, coming to defend their child.
Yeah.
It's calculated. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. The Reynas knew exactly what they were doing when it was like, you're going to go after our kid? Really? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some childhood mistakes here, Greg, right? There was definitely some, again, they understood the process and they understood what was happening to them. So I think you're right. The education has to go a long way. And I guess the next question is, being able to sort through that and like who you should and should not listen to. Obviously, of course, they should just listen to us, Gary, right? Like, we'll fix this thing.
I think, Kirk, we need to, I've been terrible at this for 15 years. We need to form coalitions.
Yeah.
We need to form more coalitions amongst people that are outspoken, amongst people who are out there trying to do the education as well.
Yeah.
And get organized. I think we've probably reached that phase of the revolution, if I can call it that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why I'm involved with, you know, covering LAFC is like, I wanted a team that me and my kids could support and watch kind of, I'm going to use this word, but quote unquote, authentically, right? Because I'm from Los Angeles, right? The Galaxy just never felt like home to me. So when LAFC came around, it was like, we're going to give it one more college try on supporting this league. And it's not easy. If you listen to my show, we are constantly complaining about the franchise, complaining about the league, complaining about this. We turn a lot of people off because of it, but we want to make sure that a voice inside the ecosystem is saying something different. So like, I think you're right. I think there are like-minded people out there who see it for what it is and are willing to speak up, but can't necessarily do it because they'll lose access, or which is funny, but we just brought in a new host on our show. Sorry, I'm like hijacking your show to talk
about. Keep going.
But we brought in a new host. My co-host moved to the Philippines and he hasn't been as involved lately. And now he's being kicked off of press conferences because he joined our show. We're pretty certain that's why. Like, he used to have a lot more access and now it's being cut off. But it's okay. We'll continue to be some sort of independent voice. But yeah.
Yeah, I always look at it from a long-term perspective, low time preference. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, look out 5, 10, 15 years and people might think that's fucking crazy, Kirk, but
I don't know.
I tend to believe that when you have that sort of outlook, you can actually do better work.
Yeah.
When you have that versus if you have, what's this going to get me in the moment for this tweet? Or what's this going to get me in the moment this week for this podcast? Or what's this going to get me in the moment for this month for this interview? You know, like, that doesn't move the needle for me if I'm trying to change things at scale. Kirk, if you don't mind, let me try to wrap some things up here with.
Yeah, let's do it.
With, were there any players in these two friendlies that kind of tickled you to say, okay, let's see more of this guy, or and let's never see this guy ever again? Because I think people who might want to tune into this show, because we're going to make it, it's about the U.S. men's national team window right now. It's like, oh, who did you like, Gary? Or who did you like, Kurt? And who shouldn't be
here? Yeah, yeah. Oh, God. From today, like, if you told me that you were just going to never call up any of the starting 11 again from this squad, like, fine. Got it. I think it's interesting that they can't figure out how to use Johnny Cardoso for somebody who obviously has some class. I think this is also an instructive moment. Like, just because you might get a $30 million sale in Europe doesn't mean that you're going to save a national team, right? You're still at that price tag. You're still basically a Jag in Europe, right?
Yeah, true.
Diego Luna is still another guy that I really like. And I think he's got something different. He's obviously, I think he's the only guy that's hard-nosed on this team, and he's got some creative flair, and he's just more exciting to watch than everybody. But like most everybody else on this team, Gary, just looks like classic American soccer run. Paxton Aronson, Brendan Aronson, right? They that's what they all look like to me, is just run. And I think you're seeing, as they move over to Europe, they're kind of plateauing, right? Mark McKenzie's another one who moved to Europe, was kind of billed as the next big center back, and just does not have it internationally. So I don't need to see any of them again. I wish them all the best. I hope they find their level and find consistent playing time. And, you know, for the next 10 years, like you said, make $200,000 to $500,000 a year. And please, I wish nothing but the best for you, because my kids need to aspire to something, and that's something to aspire to. So anyway. I really just didn't see anything in this window, Gary. I don't know. What about you?
No, I love that answer. I think you nailed it. I share much of the same sentiment. First and foremost, I've said many a times, I have nothing against the players. Nothing.
Yeah.
Ever. Whenever if I talk shit on McKinney, if I talk shit on Adams, if I talk shit on Walker Zimmerman, you know, being an MLS guy or the marketing piece, you know, this team, it's not that it's personal in any way.
Yeah.
I wish them all the best as well. I'm happy if they exploit the system. Great. Okay. If I'm looking at it purely from a sporting perspective, I share much of the same with you. Johnny Cardoso, I always rail against pedigree. Okay. Cause everybody thinks about pedigree. Oh, this player plays for Real Madrid. He must be good. This player plays for Borussia Dortmund. Or this player plays for Palmeiras in Brazil or Boca. They must be good.
Yeah.
That is a shit first order noob way of viewing the world. Okay. There's so many things involved. That aside, Cardoso must have something.
Yeah.
Because he was successful in Brazil, not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Betis purchased him, also not easy. He performed in La Liga. Most all American players, first off, very few American players even go to La Liga.
Right.
Okay.
There's a reason for that.
Huge.
I think we should get into that actually, Gary. Like,
I'm down.
But
I'm down. Go for it. No, let's exploit this. Go for it. Why?
The technical ability that you need to play in that league where the expectations are that you have all these little things, the way you receive the ball, the way that you control the ball, the way that you are part of your team, the way that like the vision that you have, the amount of understanding of where everybody is, the amount of times that you scan, right? All those things on top of all the other requisite skills. Can you ping a ball? Are you two-footed? Are you blah, 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 blah. So few American players have any of that, much less the tactical understanding to make it in La Liga. So if you watch Johnny in La Liga, he looks good. Sorry, I undercut you there. But I think it's important, like you were talking about education, that people understand why.
Yeah. Yeah. So he played in La Liga. Not easy. Okay. That tells me something, though, for all the reasons you just described. And if it's true that Atletico wants him, and is going after him, then that means that Cholo Simeone wants him.
Yes.
Because Cholo runs the show there. Mm-hmm. It's not like other managers, okay? Cholo runs the show there.
Yeah.
So that means that Cholo has given the thumbs up to the sporting director, to the club itself, like, okay, go and make this sort of thing happen. That says a lot from the mentality perspective, as well as the technical, tactical, all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of like this player is important, you know, and to your point, it's an educational moment where he comes here to the national team and he doesn't perform for the national team. This is a whole other episode, multi-episode, a book unto itself that just because you perform for the club doesn't mean that you should be performing for the national team. The contexts are completely different and it doesn't have to be club to national team. It could be going from club to club. You can be a phenom in one club and be a stupendous failure in another club because the contexts are different. Maybe the leagues are different, but more importantly, the managers are different. The system of play is different. The style of play is different. The expectations for a certain position are different. The surrounding players around you are different. Yeah. So the performances are going to be different. This even happened to the greatest of all time, Messi. This is why the Argentine public went hard against Messi for years because, Messi, you perform over there with all your buddies in Barcelona, but when you come on the national team, you're a zero. You suck ass. You don't know anything.
Yeah.
You're fucking terrible. You have no leadership skills. You can't score. You can't assist. You're terrible. The only reason you're any good is because Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, and Pep made you what you are now. We're talking about the potentially the GOAT here.
Yeah.
So folks here in the United States are going hard on Johnny because he can't perform for the national team. Guys, please understand it's a completely different context. So I'm with you, Kirk. I would like to see more of Johnny. I would never eliminate him unless I was there on the training grounds, like Pochettino, part of his staff, and I see things that I don't like that don't fit how we want to play. So I'm with you.
I think, did you have another one?
Well, I was going to go on to Luna, but let's continue there.
Oh, I was just going to segue back to Luna. I think the interesting thing about both these players is they have non-traditional routes to where they are, right? Diego Luna's in MLS now, but it's only because they all, like every MLS team passed on him and he went through USL. So there's a kid who came up through, I think originally he was in a couple academies in Northern California and found his way down to the Barca Academy here in Arizona. And then had to go to USL, right? And then became the toast of the league when he did go to RSL. And RSL looked like, they're given all this credit as being so smart for bringing him in. And it's like, this is a guy that everybody passed on. And now he's indispensable. And now it's like, you know, he has the moment with the bloody nose and in the last window. And everybody's like, this is the guy that you build around. And 2 years ago, nobody even knew his name.
Yeah.
And everybody in the league was like, nah, not that guy. Yeah. No way.
It's a testament to USL being important.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two, yeah, it reminds me of Brian McBride and the infamous face that he had. I think it was against England. I don't remember anymore. But he showed balls, and us Argentines love balls a lot.
On huevos.
Huevos, 100%, man. It goes a long way, dude. It really does. Look, I don't want to equate Brian's youth teams to the senior international level all that much, but there are commonalities. And a lot of the reasons that Brian's youth teams were extremely successful is because he instilled balls in his players. Yeah. And the players exhibited balls, you know, one way or another versus the opposition, and hunger and desire and intensity, all those sorts of synonyms. I'm not surprised Pochettino wants balls. It's in the culture. So get me balls. Like Rodrigo, like De Paul, okay? De Paul is not a finesse player, a great player, a tactical or technical maestro in the midfield. No, but the guy has balls like Cholo Simeone had balls.
Yeah.
And that is valuable. So you have a Diego Luna. Is he an international guy, world-class, like a Jude Bellingham or something like that? No, absolutely not. Let's not make him out to be something that he's absolutely not. He is not a world beater in any respect.
Yeah.
But the kid's got balls and he's got some good soccer chops.
Yeah.
He's valuable. I'm for it.
I like that he's just a different profile.
Yes.
Like, I mean, how the only profile that you see for midfielders in the U.S. is just runners. Destroyers, right? It's why, oddly enough, it's when Greg comes in. Now I'm gonna open up a whole other can of worms, Gary, and we're gonna go for another half hour here. Greg comes in and he's, you know, positional play, and we're gonna be doing this, and we're gonna use the ball to disorganize opponents. And what midfield finally made him successful? The MMA midfield, McKennie, right. Musa, Adams, destroyers, all of them, right? And that's how they got results. And that's fine. If you want to be that, be that. Just don't try and sell me that you're running this positional play masterclass. I don't want to hear it, Greg. So it's exciting for me that the U.S. has somebody with even a slightly different profile. Because like you said, he's not a world beater. We're not talking about the second coming of Iniesta here. We're talking about a guy that has some huevos and is going to not quit. And he's going to do some creative things here and there on the international stage. Great. That's what I want. That's what
cool.
I want. Different
cool.
profiles. Yeah.
No, I'm for it, man. But all these other guys, let me just run through the list of today, like Zimmerman, whatever. And like,
can I say one thing on Zimmerman? Okay. I feel like I picked on him.
Yeah.
So like you said, we really don't wish these guys any harm or we don't have any ill will for him. Walker Zimmerman, when he got traded from LAFC, he was my son's favorite player. Why he chose a center back for a favorite player, I don't know. I think it's because he scored a game winner at a game that we were at against RSL, I think. And my son, who was then, I think, 7, cried all night when Zimmerman got traded. And I woke up in the morning and he had handwritten a note to him. And I took a picture and I sent it to a reporter that I know. She passed it along to him and he sent a note back to my son. And so like, this is the impact that these guys can have, right? So like, and I am forever grateful for that. My son still has it framed on his wall, like a picture of this text that Walker sent back. Right. So man, like they athletes really can have so much impact on people's lives. And again, don't begrudge them at all. Sorry, I keep derailing.
Zero begrudgment. As a matter of fact, the first time I ever spoke of Walker Zimmerman, I think it was the Olympic team. Caleb Porter was having a camp here in Home Depot Center when it was called Home Depot Center. And he, Zimmerman was part of that group. So I'm talking a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
And I wrote an article, kind of assessing all the players in that camp. And Zimmerman was like, no, get this guy out of here. But yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse here. No ill will whatsoever. It's just like, hey, you want to run an assessment as a footballer, purely sporting? Zimmerman, get the fuck out. Who is this guy, Harry L. guy, the right back? Get the fuck out. McKenzie, great. You benefited a lot from the mass exodus in 2018-2019. The Philadelphia Union was forced into actually allowing a transfer to happen. But do you have what it takes? Not so sure.
Yeah.
The left back from Columbus Crew, what's his name again? Arston. He has, to be charitable here, he has some attacking qualities, okay? He has some attacking qualities, but in this particular game against Switzerland, you couldn't attack.
Yeah.
And you were exploited. So your defensive capabilities were completely exploited. You're out. Sebastian Berhalter, your last name got you very far. You at least have to be a certain level of a good player to actually be a professional. So nepotism aside, you still have to be a good player to make it. It's not pure nepotism. You have to be a good player. You're a good player. Great. And you're doing good in the MLS. No, thank you on the U.S. men's national team. Get the F out. Yeah. Johnny Cardoso, I want you to continue getting opportunities. You need to be with people who are around you who know how to play football.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Period. The Sullivan kid, this is Jordan Morris part two, as far as I'm concerned. No, thank you. The Aronson brothers, again, beneficiaries of the 2018-2019 mass exodus to Europe. And Philadelphia Union said, we have to fucking play the kids and we have to kind of get them transferred so that our next generation signed with us and MLS is all good to go. Are they good players? Yes, you're good players. You're going to have a great career. You're international caliber. No, thank you. Exit stage left, please. And this white guy, I have no idea who this white guy is.
Yeah, David Stryker for Vancouver. And I think he's just beneficiary of Vancouver kind of running through the league right now. But yeah, it's like him specifically, every time a ball, I think it was Zimmerman, surprised me with the ball that he hit through all the defensive lines and White just couldn't handle it, couldn't control it. I thought they were trying to target him and hold up play as you would in a 4-2-3-1 like this. And he was just not up to the task at all. Sorry, dude, that's a no for me.
Yeah. So from this whole camp, for me, it's like Johnny Cardoso. Yes. And people will be like, what are you talking about, Gary? He was the worst one in the entire camp. Like, guys, welcome to my world. This is the world I live in. I live in bizarro world where the people who actually know football, you guys have the opposite view of the people who know football. So yes, Johnny Cardoso is a yes for me. Luna is, let's keep looking.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Chris Richards, yes. We've always been consistent on Chris Richards. Yes. Jack McGlynn, he has something special in his left foot.
Yeah.
Special is important. It's important. None of the guys that we've been talking about have anything special. Johnny Cardoso is not special. He has nothing special. He's a good player. He's not special.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris Richards is a good player, but there's nothing special where you say like, this is a special, unique talent or generational talent. There's nothing special there. Okay. Adams, nothing special there. Maybe he has a special engine.
Yeah.
Or maybe that gets him there, right? Special engine. Pulisic, special. Maybe some 1v1 specialness there, but global class is what I'm looking at. Not so much. But if I'm thinking about like a Jack McGlynn, the left foot is a special left foot. Like Alex Mendez, very special
right.
left foot, like world-class special left foot. So specialness is important. So Jack McGlynn, okay, keep maybe giving him some looks. Luca de la Torre, who I gave a lot of flowers to in the game against Turkey, nothing special there, but he's good. Like if you think about, guys, don't get it wrong. I'm not saying Luca de la Torre is Vitinha, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But if you look at Vitinha, because everybody looks at the Champions League final. They're not exposed to Vitinha when he was in Portugal, his all that stuff. They don't look at all that stuff. They only see like Champions League semifinal or final and if the player performs. But Luca de la Torre has a lot of Vitinha-esque type things, not as special. And there's nothing special there, but he can serve a function. Okay. Yeah. And then nobody else. So those are my guys.
Yeah, I think I think what's interesting about that group, Gary, is most of them are just getting like the benefit of the doubt because of where they play, what they've done in the past or whatever, right? Like, so Cardoso is one where it's like, well, there's something there. Cholo Simeone likes him, right? He's functioning in La Liga. So maybe there's something else going on in today's match where he's not as effective or he doesn't look good, right? And I think the same thing with De La Torre, right? Where it's, this guy's been a couple more places and been able to perform in these spots. There's got to be something there. But, you know, is he going to move the needle? Is he all of a sudden going to make the midfield really cook? No. But if you're telling me he's going to be your fifth or sixth midfielder, great, fine. Yeah, whatever. Bring him in again. What do I care? I think some of these guys have earned the benefit of the doubt and some of them have not. I would love to see a guy like Jack McGlynn make a big move and test himself and see where he lands. I think so often the trap is that big TAM paycheck in MLS, like you said, and then it's just like, well, now like that's going to be your level forever. And maybe that's what you want. And I thought you bringing up Jordan Morris is a perfect example, right? Where what I love about Jordan Morris is he's the ultimate Rorschach test. And I love to point out like who discovered Jordan Morris, guys, and where was he?
Jurgen.
Was it Jurgen? And was Jordan Morris at Stanford when he did it? I love to point that out to people who hate Jurgen. But you know, had a couple moves lined up to Germany and decided to stay home. And again, great. Like it's your life, it's your career, do it. But like you have to understand there's a trade off there, and it's probably that you're going to plateau. Because again, going back to MLS and the level thing. So I'm there with you, man.
And that's a huge trap. And again, I think the American mainstream soccer fan base is going through these growing pains that so many other countries have already gone through and that I've lived through as well. So for example, in this context, you said the TAM money, right? Mm-hmm. So here you are, you're a young guy, you get a homegrown contract, you do pretty well, they played the kids, you were given opportunities, you took advantage of your opportunities, you get platform on the national team, and since you got platform on the national team, you're going to get, by default, opportunities or offers, proposals coming in from overseas, which are better than your shitty homegrown contract. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now you have leverage over MLS. And so MLS says, oh, well, we got this new U22 initiative thing going on, or a TAM, you know, thing in our roster. So here, let us give you 500K, you know, or 600K or 700K or something like that. And what ends up happening, good for the player, obviously, but what ends up happening is that to get over that hurdle of say 700K in Europe, you have to be a serious player.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you have interest in Europe, the chances are you're not getting over 700K salary proposals. Okay. Mm-hmm. Chances are 200, 150, 300, 350, 400, whatever it is, but over 700, like you have to be super killing it on the national team to get that type of money. So now you've kind of like economically locked yourself into MLS forever. And that is the trap. And that is the trap that has been discussed so often in Mexican football, for instance, for decades. Because there's a lot of money in Mexico. A lot of the Mexican players who made it to the national team, this is exactly what happened to them. So Tigres or Chivas or America or Pachuca or Cruz Azul or whoever, okay, we'll give you $1 million a year or whatever. And then Europeans are like priced out at that point. So everybody stays local in Mexican football. And that has crushed the Mexican national team as a consequence.
Yeah. Even a larger scale, I think they've kind of sorted it out now, but I mean, forever PSG was called the Golden Prison. Right? They just buy players, pay them whatever they want because they got more money than God. And then you can't leave when you realize like, oh, this club isn't going anywhere. And I realize it's rich given what just happened like 2 weeks ago. But so many guys were caught in that golden prison for years and couldn't escape because they were any other club was just priced out because they were making so much. And this is just a different scale. So
indeed. And it doesn't even have to be to that level. It could be like, right, we're going to offer you a homegrown contract for 90K a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the European offer for an unproven amateur is not 90K.
Right.
To go over
right.
there. Yep. So you do that sort of kind of weight sort of thing and like, oh, I'm going to take the 90K. Well, okay, great. Yeah. It's opportunity cost at that point.
Right. Right. And again, I can't say I would handle it any different, to be honest, Gabby. Like, if somebody hands me all that money to stay home and play the game that I love, then yeah, I'm good.
Totally. So the Inter Milan coach goes to Saudi, you know, and gets paid $50 million a year to be the coach in some Saudi club. Great. I have a price too, Kirk. If you want to offer me $50 million, I might sell out to MLS. Maybe.
Yeah. And I mean, to bring it home on this point is just that, like, you know, if that's the decision that you're making, it probably precludes involvement long term with the national team because you're not going to be at that level.
Indeed.
There's trade-offs.
There are special interests.
Yeah.
Good, man. This was a good chat, dude. I'm glad we did this, man.
Yeah, me too. Appreciate the invite.
No problem. Any parting words?
No. The best thing that I can say is get involved with wherever you are and start coaching, start trying to educate both yourself and the people around you on the game. And if you feel like you don't have a good understanding of it yet, and like I'll be the first to admit, like I'm still learning. I like suffer from imposter syndrome, so I'm always looking for more resources and ways to improve my own understanding of the game and how to teach it to others. So that would be my recommendation to everybody: is stay hungry and keep learning and keep lifting where you stand.
Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter too much, at Kirk Kinsey. The show that we reference is at @counterpress_. Full disclosure, it is a LAFC podcast. So if you want to hear us try and skirt the line between liking LAFC and hating MLS, then we're the show for you.
Brilliant, brother. Thank you again, man. I got a little buzzed, but the words flow a lot better for me when I'm a little happy.
All good. I appreciate it, man.
Okay, ciao.
Bye.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.